From down under to down south, follow the adventures of an Australian family who packed up and moved to the other side of the world to follow a dream of making a life in Nashville, Tennessee. I'm your host, Aussie Mike, and together with Bicky, Bowie, and Bree, we will share our daily craziness in an attempt to warn you or inspire you to make this transcontinental move. It's a big day and welcome to another episode from Down Under to Down South, as this week I'll take you on an exploration of predatory lending practices in the US. This is particularly important for new immigrants to the country and those that may be in a position of trying to start their banking and credit journey here. All that and more, so stick around. You know, one of the hardest things when first relocating to the US is establishing credit. Credit is all based around your social security number here, which is probably brand new and has no history. This means that it can be very difficult to obtain a loan to buy a car, get a credit card or a store card, buy a house, and even has implications on your general insurance costs. Like many things, there are people out there that will attempt to take advantage of your lack of knowledge. So in today's episode, I really wanted to tell you what to look out for as we discuss predatory lending in the US and review title loans, subprime mortgages, and payday loans. Predatory lending typically involves imposing unfair, deceptive, or abusive loan terms on borrowers. In many cases, these loans carry high fees and interest rates. They strip the borrower of equity or can even place a creditworthy borrower into a lower credit-rated and more expensive loan, all to the lender's benefit. Predatory lenders often use aggressive sales tactics and exploit borrowers' lack of understanding of financial transactions. Through deceptive or fraudulent actions and a lack of transparency, they entice, induce, and assist a borrower in taking out a loan that they will not reasonably be able to pay back. Now, a loan shark, for instance, is the typical example of a predatory lender. That is, someone who loans money at an extremely high interest rate, may even threaten violence to collect on their debts. However, it doesn't just need to be a loan shark. In fact, a great deal of predatory lending is carried out by more established institutions like banks, finance companies, mortgage brokers, attorneys, or even real estate contractors. Predatory lending puts many borrowers at risk, but it primarily targets those with few credit options or who are vulnerable in other ways. For example, new immigrants, people who have inadequate income, which leads to regular and urgent needs for cash to make ends meet, those with low credit scores, those with less access to education, or subject to discriminatory lending practices because of their race, ethnicity, age, or disability. Predatory lending is designed above all to benefit the lender. It ignores or hinders the borrower's ability to repay a debt. Lending tactics are often deceptive and attempt to take advantage of a borrower's lack of understanding of financial terms and the rules surrounding loans. These tactics, they can include several things, such as excessive and abusive fees. Now, these are often disguised or downplayed because they are not included in a loan's interest rate. According to the FDIC, fees totaling more than 5% of the loan amount are not uncommon for predatory lenders. Excessive prepayment penalties are another example. Balloon payments. Now, balloon payments, that basically means having a substantial payment that's due right at the end of the loan, and it's often used by predatory lenders to make your monthly payment look low. The problem is that you may not be able to afford the balloon payment and will then have to refinance, incurring new costs, or default on the loan at the end. Loan flipping. Now, this is where the lender pressures a borrower to refinance again and again, generating fees and points for the lender every time. And as a result, the borrower can end up trapped in an escalating debt burden. Then we've got asset-based lending and equity stripping. And this is where the lender grants a loan based on your asset. So let's say it's your home or your car, rather than on your ability to repay the loan. You risk losing your home or your car when you fall behind on payments. So people that this affects typically are equity rich and cash poor. So older adults that might be on, say, a fixed income, they can be targeted for these loans. And it might be something as simple as, say, a house repair. They will then have difficulty repaying, and that will then jeopardize their equity in their home, and they could lose everything. Unnecessary add-on products or services such as single premium life insurance for a mortgage, it's another one to look out for. Then we have steering. Now, steering is when lenders steer borrowers into expensive subprime loans, even when their credit history and other factors qualify them for prime loans. reverse redlining. Now, this is the racist housing policy that effectively blocked black families from getting mortgages. It was actually outlawed by the Fair Housing Act of 1968, but redlined neighborhoods are still largely inhabited by black and Latino communities. And in a kind of reverse redlining, they are often targeted as well by predatory and subprime lenders. Now, all of that sounds scary enough to me, and I've worked in finance and banking industry for over 20 years, so I can only imagine how it sounds to someone that has no finance or limited financial experience and someone that's just trying to get about on their everyday life. So when we start to look at some of the classic predatory lending types, subprime mortgages really is the big one. And classic predatory lending centers around home mortgages. Because home loans are backed by a borrower's real property, a predatory lender can profit not only from the loan terms stacked in their favor, but also from the sale of a foreclosed home if the borrower defaults. It's important to remember that subprime loans, they're not automatically predatory, and banks actually argue that the higher interest rates reflect the greater cost of riskier lending to consumers with bad credit. But even without deceptive practices, a subprime loan is riskier for borrowers because of the tremendous financial burden that it represents. With the explosive growth of subprime loans came the potential for predatory lending, and when the housing market crashed and a foreclosure crisis precipitated the global financial crisis back in 2008, homeowners with subprime mortgages became vulnerable. Subprime loans came to represent a disproportionate percentage of residential foreclosures. Black and Latino homeowners were particularly affected by this as well. I guess for a better understanding of the subprime crisis and the GFC or global financial crisis, I would recommend taking a look at The Big Short. It was a movie that came out back in 2015. It was based on a book in 2010 of the same name. It very simply explains and dramatizes in an almost semi-comedic fashion what occurred in the lead up to the crisis and what the outcome has been. So in a nutshell, the 2008 financial crisis was a significant economic downturn that began in 2007 and persisted for several years. It affected global economies. It wasn't just America. It was everywhere. I was working in banking in 2008 in Australia, and I remember the effects of that one there very well as well. There were several key factors that contributed to this crisis, and some may argue that we might be circling around this again right now. So number one, there was the housing market collapse. And the crisis originated when the US housing market transitioned from basically a boom to a bust scenario. Large quantities of mortgage-backed securities and derivatives suddenly lost value, leading to widespread financial instability. Secondly, there was predatory lending and subprime mortgages. So financial institutions engaged in predatory lending, targeting low-income homebuyers with subprime mortgages. And these risky loans eventually resulted in a wave of defaults. People lost their houses, people lost everything. Then we had excessive risk-taking by financial institutions, where many of the banks took on excessive risk, especially the investment side or the shadow banking system. Now, this system grew to rival the traditional banks, but operated with less security and regulation. And when it collapsed, credit flow to consumers and businesses was severely impacted. Government regulation failures was another one, and this is the regulatory failures which really contributed to the crisis, because the Federal Reserve in the US, it failed to prevent banks from granting mortgages to individuals who later proved to be bad credit risks. And then the fifth point was asset bubbles and excessive borrowing. And this is one potentially where I could see even from an Australian perspective right now. Consumers and corporations borrowed excessively, creating asset bubbles, when in particular in the housing market. Mortgages were extended at low interest rates to unqualified borrowers who ultimately couldn't repay them. You had housing prices that were soaring, people that were owing lots of money. When the housing prices came down, they owed more on their property than what the property was worth. People defaulted, walked away. So looking at predatory lenders and predatory mortgage lenders, they targeted aggressively in predominantly minority neighborhoods, regardless of their income or their credit worthiness. Even after controlling for credit score and other risk factors like loan-to-value ratios, subordinate loans, and debt-to-income ratios, data shows that Black and Latino borrowers were more likely to receive subprime loans at higher costs. Women, too, were targeted during the housing boom that crashed spectacularly in 2008, regardless of their income or credit rating. In fact, Black women with the highest incomes were 5 times more likely than white men of similar incomes to receive subprime loans. Predatory lenders typically target vulnerable populations, such as those struggling to meet monthly expenses, people who have recently lost their jobs, and those who are denied access to a wider range of credit options for legal reasons. such as discrimination based on a lack of education or older age. Now, some of the banks obviously did get caught out for this, and in fact, in 2012, Wells Fargo reached a $175 billion settlement with the Justice Department to compensate Black and Latino borrowers who qualified for loans and were charged higher fees or rates or improperly steered into subprime loans. Other banks also paid settlements. But the damage to families of color is lasting. Homeowners not only lost their homes, but the chance to recover their investment when housing prices also climbed back up, contributing yet again to a racial wealth gap. In October 2021, the Federal Reserve revealed that the average Black and Hispanic or Latino households earn about half as much as the average white household and own only about 15 to 20% as much net wealth. Let's take a look at payday loans as the next one. And the payday loan industry, it lends billions of dollars annually in small dollar high cost loans as a bridge to the next payday. These loans typically are for 2 weeks with annual interest rates ranging from 390 to 780%. That's right, 780%. So although the federal Truth in Lending requires payday lenders to disclose their finance charges, many people overlook these costs. Most loans are for 30 days or less, and they help borrowers to meet short-term liabilities. Loan amounts on these loans are usually from $100, maybe up to $1,000. The loans usually can be rolled over for additional finance charges, and many borrowers, in fact, as high as 80%, end up as repeat customers. With new fees added each time a payday loan is refinanced, the debt can easily spiral out of control. A recent study found that using payday loans doubles the rate of personal bankruptcy. A number of court cases has been filed against payday lenders as lending laws have been enacted since the 2008 financial crisis to create a more transparent and fair lending market for consumers. However, research suggests that the market for payday loans has only expanded since 2008. And guess what helped to expand it? The COVID pandemic of 2020-2022. Title loans is another one to look out for. And a title loan is basically a secured loan that lets borrowers use their vehicle as collateral. Now, since your car secures the loan repayment, the lender can repossess your car if you don't repay the loan on time. Title loans are usually short-term, high-interest loans that have few requirements, meaning that even if you have poor credit, you'll still have an opportunity to qualify. Many times, credit scores and histories aren't considered at all. You can apply for a title loan through a lender that offers one as long as you own your vehicle outright and have a lien-free car title. During your application, you'll need to show your lender your car, proof of ownership, and your license. If you're approved, you'll hand over your car title in exchange for the loan. So while the lender determines your loan terms, title loans typically have terms of around 30 days, and they're very similar to payday loans. This means that you'll make one lump sum payment at the end of your loan period. You're required to make payments on the amount you borrowed, plus any interest and fees. Most lenders for these ones charge a monthly fee of 25% of the loan amount, which translates to an annual percentage rate of at least 300%. This is where title loans can become a headache, because if you don't repay your loan on time, you can lose your car because it serves as collateral for the loan. So if you do choose to take out a title loan, be sure to pay it on time and don't risk losing your asset. Now, one of the things that I have certainly heard of is people immigrating to the US, they're purchasing a car with cash and then being advised to go and get a title loan so that they can start to build credit. Don't do it. There are other ways that you can build credit. Title loans, to me, are predatory. The interest, the fees, the charges are exorbitant. Stay clear of title loans. Another one to look out for is check cashing fees. Now, America, much to my surprise when I first moved here, and many other foreigners too, still has a love affair with writing checks. Now, if you're paid by check and you don't have a bank account to deposit it into, or you need the money straight away and don't want to wait the 3 days for it to clear, you can either take it to the bank that the check is written on or go to a check cashing service. So if you go to the bank where the check is written on, the fee to cash the check, it does vary by financial institution. It can be $5 to $10. Some charge between 1% to 4% of the value of the check. Now, this fee is justified by the bank stating it is to cover potential fraud and their employees' time in servicing a non-bank customer. funny because that always surprised me, given that the bank is actually cashing their own customer's check and does also have internal measures in place, such as calling the check maker to ensure the check's validity. The cynic in me would suggest that it's more so a fee grab to keep the bank's profits rolling along. Let's keep management happy, keep taking those fees. Check cashing services typically also charge a percentage-based fee, and that fee can range between 2 to 10% of the value of the check. Most check cashing services also have a minimum fee of at least $3. So think about it this way. You've got a $500 weekly paycheck. You need your money straight away. You've got things you've got to go and do. You go to a check cashing place, it could cost you $50 to cash that check, which is the equivalent of 4 hours work. Check cashing places as well, it's a last resort. I understand why people do it, because they're unable to open bank accounts because they have bad credit. So driving around the neighborhoods of the US, it is fairly easy to tell the economic situation of an area. The more check cashing and payday lenders that you see, the more challenged the area is economically. And for those of you in Australia, think of it as where they tend to put clubs with poker machines. It's always in areas where people are less fortunate and people can't afford it. So if you have bad credit or no credit, it can be very hard to obtain any form of new credit that's not predatory, and sometimes to even open a bank account. One way to help with this is to open a secured credit card. Secured credit cards provide a path for nearly anyone to receive approval and start improving a credit profile. With a secured credit card, you are required to put down a cash security deposit, and it's normally equal to the card's credit limit, which serves as collateral to protect the lender. With responsible behavior, many card holders can upgrade their secured card to a non-secured counterpart and get their deposit money returned. There's quite a few of these out on the market at the moment. Bank of America, they currently have a secured card that has a 3% cashback feature. US Bank have a couple of secured card options, and credit card issuers such as Capital One and Discover also have some. I highly recommend this as a way to get your credit history started or to try to rebuild it. Card limits can be as low as $300, and as I said, in many cases, if you use the card responsibly, pay it back every month, you may find it being upgraded to an unsecured card after 12 months or so. This is a great option for people newly arriving in America that are wanting to establish credit and are being declined by banks because they have no credit history. In closing today, I would urge anyone considering a payday or title loan in particular to rethink and do your research. These debt traps are not designed to help you, and in the end, it is the lender who comes out on top. Check us out on YouTube for additional content, and remember to like and share. Thank you so much for listening to From Down Under to Down South. Take care, guys. We'll catch you next time.